Morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, May 24th is in session. Good morning, everybody. Congratulations to the Caps. We have any fans? All right. Good game. All righty. Are there any motions, Madam Vice Chair?
There are, Madam Chair. I move that the Commission add to the agenda consideration of the adoption of 40-year report and that the Commission determine pursuant to 11 CFR 2.7D that business so requires and no earlier public announcement was possible. I further move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda documents number 18-27A, 18-28A, and 18-28B.
Happy to support the motion to put the 40-year report on the agenda as long as it's the last time. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Is there a motion regarding the minutes, Madam Vice Chair?
Yes. I move approval of the minutes as set forth in agenda documents 18-24A and 18-25A, and that's for the open meeting of Wednesday, March 14th, 2018.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda is draft advisory opinion 2018-7, MACE. I see we have Mr. Backer with us. Would you like to join? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We have an opening presentation this morning by Ms. Jory. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Hunter. Good morning, Commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 18-28-A and 18-28-B, draft advisory opinions responding to a request from South Carolina State Representative Nancy Mace. The requester asks several questions about the application of the Act and Commission regulations to the requester's proposal to establish, maintain, and control a non-connected federal independent expenditure-only political committee to make public communications promoting, supporting, attacking, or opposing clearly identified federal candidates. Both drafts conclude that the proposed committee would be acting as Representative Mace's agent in making the public communications described in the request. The drafts further conclude that because Representative Mace is a state office holder and candidate, she and her agents, including the proposed committee, may not use non-federal funds to pay for public communications promoting, supporting, attacking, or opposing clearly identified federal candidates. We did not receive any comments on the request or on either draft. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Mr. Backer, there are two drafts. The second one was put out late yesterday, but it comes to the same conclusion, it's just a little bit streamlined. Were you able to review both of them?
Yes, I was.
Oh, that's loud.
Does anybody have any questions? Comments? Mr. Backer, do you have any questions?
Well, I would just like to point out that a quick Google search last night found that, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, there are 511,000 state and local elected officials in this country. If we assume that's town council members, school board members, county commissioners, drain commissioners, all manner of officers, including state legislators like Representative Mace. If we assume that between primaries and general elections, every one of them has one electoral opponent on average across a year, that's over 1 million American citizens who are going to be denied their opportunity to fully participate in the political process because of this. They're not going to be able to engage in otherwise lawful activity that hundreds of millions of other Americans can. And I think that's highly problematic. And I think it rests on a misunderstanding of McConnell as the controlling opinion here, where I think speech now is actually the more apt controlling opinion in this particular case, because McConnell did not address the matter from the perspective of, they didn't have super PACs when McConnell was decided, and so they weren't looking at this kind of creature. It didn't exist. They were talking about something entirely different, and they were using a standard of corruption that was expressly overruled in both Citizens United and McCutcheon to reach that conclusion. And so we would urge that the commission reconsider the drafts.
Thank you. Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I take your argument, and I understand it. As a commissioner, I feel that in the Speech Now case, while there are there are language, and that could be used as a precedent to obviously attack this provision, its constitutionality in court. Through the advisory opinion process, I feel that as a commissioner, we don't necessarily have a latitude to declare a provision unconstitutional that wasn't addressed in the Speech Now case. So, you know, regardless of what my personal sympathies might be, I think as in my official role, the analysis I believe that's in these drafts is a straightforward take on what the legal requirements are. I think that under our current statutory framework that it reaches the right conclusion, but perhaps through the courts, they will find that your argument is persuasive, and there are precedents that could be marshaled in their favor. But like I said, I think under a straightforward reading of the law that hasn't yet been challenged, this provision, 3125F1, I feel that I'm bound to apply that in this particular case.
Thank you, and I agree with everything Commissioner Peterson said. I have the exact same opinion. Anybody else? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Conduct is not lawful when Congress makes it unlawful. So I think the drafts are both legally sound. I could support either one. I'm not sure where the will of the commission is on this. I think they come to the same conclusion.
Commissioner Walther.
Your interest in how Speech Now might have affected or maybe sub salientio overruled that aspect of McConnell. Do you want to address this further in a further brief to us?
Well, I wouldn't say that sub salientio overruled McConnell. I don't think McConnell reaches this particular the facts and the laws applied here. I would say that, again, because super PACs didn't exist at the time, and the standard of corruption that they're expressly using in McConnell was the same one that was overruled in Citizens United, and then and the new model of corruption, of actual and apparent quid pro quo corruption, was affirmed in McCutcheon. So I think McConnell doesn't really control here, and that Speech Now does. And that Speech Now holds that contributions to super PACs as a matter of law cannot corrupt federal office holders and therefore may not be limited. There's nothing in Speech Now or its reasoning to suggest that contributions to super PACs may be more corrupting if the super PACs are related to state and local office holders.
I just thought if you wanted to brief it further, we could consider that, I suppose.
I don't know that would necessarily be beneficial or helpful given the what seems to be the consensus of the commission.
Madam Vice Chair.
I believe Mr. Backer wants to brief it before a different forum.
Any other comments? I think, Madam Vice Chair, your question was which one. I think the second one, which I think is draft B, 18-28-B, is the one that we prefer.
Well, as I said, I'm happy to, I think both of the drafts are fine. So if you would prefer, I'm happy to move draft B and see if it gets four votes.
Great.
With respect to the advisory opinion request 2018-07 MACE, I move approval of draft B as set forth in agenda document number 18-28B.
Thank you.
Was this the draft that was just handed out this morning? Or are you talking about it? I saw the.
It was circulated last night or yesterday.
Well, it was circulated yesterday, and then it was made public a little bit later yesterday.
I'd like to have some time to look at it.
Okay. Steve, are you prepared to vote for the other draft?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Mr. Backer, do you have a preference? Would you prefer to wait for draft B or go ahead and get your answer on draft A?
I think they reached the same conclusion regardless, and so I would hate to further stall the work of the commission.
Madam Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion. I'm going to try a different one. Although, as I said, I think they really are basically very similar. One is a little shorter. So, having withdrawn my previous motion, with respect to the advisory opinion request from State Representative Mace, advisory opinion request 2018-07, I move approval of draft A, as set forth in agenda document number 18-28A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you for coming, Mr. Backer.
Thank you.
Next matter on the agenda is a rulemaking proposal, agenda document number 18-26-A. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A few days ago, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence released a joint statement from Senators Burr and Warner about foreign interference in past and future U.S. elections. And they were pretty clear about what they thought about it and what they thought might happen, and they impressively spoke with a single voice. Senator Burr wrote, "There is no doubt that Russia undertook an unprecedented effort to interfere with our 2016 elections." Senator Warner added, "While our committee's investigation remains ongoing, one thing is already abundantly clear. We have to do a better job in the future if we want to protect our elections from foreign interference." And I was inspired by that statement because there's been a lot of, like everything else in this town, there's been a lot of disagreement and people not working together. And here are some serious people who are confronting a serious problem and trying to do it on a consensus basis and on a fact-based basis. And I appreciated that, and I thought that's really the way Washington should work. And so I thought I would take another run at this because I share their concern that foreign actors have intervened in our past elections and it appears intend to intervene again. Dan Coats, the Director of National Intelligence, in February told the Senate Intelligence Committee that, quote, "there should be no doubt that Russia perceived that its past efforts as successful and views the 2018 U.S. midterm elections as a potential target for Russian midterm operations." And there's really no reason to assume that it will only be the Russians. I mean, other folks are watching what happened before and watching what will happen in the future. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in 2018, but a lot of people are concerned about it, and I'm one of them. And we have had new information since the last time we talked about this here, in addition to the recent statement from Senators Burr and Warner. There was an indictment issued in February that indicted 13 Russians and 3 Russian entities for engaging in a conspiracy to defeat the lawful government functions of the United States by dishonest means in order to interfere with U.S. political and electoral processes, including the 2016 U.S. presidential election. The alleged conspiracy had a budget of more than $1.2 million per month at its peak. And the indictment specifically named provisions of the FICA as part of the laws that were targeted and violated. That's a lot of money. I mean, I think the last time we talked about this, there was the information that we had was based on what Facebook had released, and it looked like there were a bunch of small ad buys out there, and maybe it didn't look like there was any serious money being spent on this effort, but I think we know now that serious money is being spent on this effort. And I've seen numerous reports in the newspaper of alleging foreigners using various, excuse me, non-disclosing groups to try and spend money in our elections. There's a Chinese state-owned chemical company that joined the Wanhua Chemical Group It's a $10 billion company controlled by China, and it joined the American Chemistry Council in February, which during previous election cycles has spent tens of millions of dollars in dark money on our elections. We have obviously a variety of complaints, but I'm not going to talk about them, but we are receiving information through a variety of public and private sources that indicate that we should be seriously concerned about people trying to influence the elections and in 2018 and spending serious money to do it. Open Secrets recently came out with a new study, I think in conjunction with the Wesleyan Media Group, that reported that TV ad buys are up nearly 90% for the 2018 elections, and I should say this includes state and federal ad buys, but dark money groups are behind 2 out of 3 ads purchased by these outside groups. So, you know, as consistent with a trend, there's a lot of money being spent out there, there's a lot of money being spent by dark money groups, we have reason to think that there are foreign actors who are looking for every single avenue to try and influence our election. Dick Cheney said in March 2017 that Russia's alleged actions could be considered an act of war against the United States. So this is not something that only one side is concerned about. There's bipartisan concern about this very serious issue. Yes, we have an enforcement process to deal with complaints about what happened in 2016, but that's looking retroactively, and that's important. But what I'm concerned about even more so is what happens next, what happens in the elections that are coming up. And I suppose some people might argue, well, it's already too late to try and do anything for 2018. I would remind my colleagues that in 2002, the Congress passed the Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act and put very tight timelines on rulemaking under that act, and the original soft money rules were given a 90-day deadline for putting the rules out, and the commission, which none of us were serving on at the time, but our predecessors, 6 commissioners under the leadership of Dave Mason, Michael Toner, Brad Smith, Scott Thomas, Danny Lee McDonald, and Carl Sandstrom, rolled up their sleeves and said, okay, we've got 90 days to get a difficult rulemaking done, and we're going to do it. And they did do it. And if we were to roll up our sleeves similarly today, in 90 days, we could still beat Labor Day and get a rule out. And, you know, yes, they had to work long nights to do it. I think there were hearings that lasted till midnight back then, and nobody likes to sign up for that kind of enterprise, but I think this is important enough. If preventing office holders and candidates from raising soft money was important enough to put in that kind of an effort, I think preventing foreigners from spending money in our elections is equally, if not more important, and deserves the same kind of effort from the commission. I know it's an imposition on our staff, but I have every confidence that they too would be willing to roll up their sleeves for this important endeavor and help us try and do it. So I think that we really should. Would it be better if we'd already done something? Yes, but it is not too late to act now. It's not too late to try and put some more backstops into place before the 2018 election. I am very much concerned that if we do nothing, we're just leaving the door open, and there are plenty of people out there who do not have the best interests of the United States at heart who will be all too willing to walk through the doors that we leave open for them. So we have a lot of ways that we could address this. I held a forum on this issue a while back, and we had a lot of really smart people who came up with a lot of good ideas. I know my colleagues have also come up with some ideas, and I think ideally we would put all of those ideas together in a package, put them out for public comment. We would have to schedule a relatively tight comment deadline and hearing deadline, but again, I think we can do it, and we should do it, and I hope that there would be interest in doing it. I'm not trying to land. I'm not trying here today to land on any particular result, but I think that we really need to do more to shore up our defenses against foreign money spending in our elections. I can try to do that through a variety of motions to see if any of them will stick, but I'm hoping there will be some interest on the commission in addressing this issue and addressing it now.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, certainly this issue of foreign interference in American elections is one I think that we all take seriously, and the legitimacy of our democracy and the integrity of the process by which we elect a president, Congress, goes a long ways towards perceptions about the legitimacy of our government. And so this is an issue that we all take very seriously, and I think we have done so in terms of the way we've handled our enforcement agenda. And I think as we've approached this issue, I think that there has been, we have had some bipartisan breakthroughs. The issue that has, I believe, produced the most evidence is the use of Facebook ads and other internet communications. There have been indictments that have been brought against foreign individuals and companies that have alleged to have violated the Federal Election Campaign Act and the foreign national prohibition contained in that act. And we do have a rulemaking underway to address that specific issue. We're going to have a hearing next month on that issue, and I feel optimistic that we're going to be able to move forward and find a path forward on that issue. I read the statement from the Senate Intelligence Committee, and you referenced some of it. The one thing I guess that stood out to me, in addition to the strong statements that were mentioned by Senator Burr and Senator Warner, was that the inquiry continues on. That there is work that's still left to do. Senator Burr said, "I look forward to completing the committee's inquiry and issuing our findings and recommendations to the American people." I'll quote another statement that the vice chair also mentioned, was that he said, "While our committee's investigation remains ongoing, one thing is already abundantly clear: we have to do a better job in the future if we want to protect our elections from foreign interference." So it sounds like the inquiry is still going on, that there are going to be findings that are going to be issued by the committee. And I think that I look forward to seeing what those findings are, to see to what extent the efforts to interfere involve matters within our jurisdiction. Facebook ads and any express advocacy activities, those clearly fall within our jurisdiction. Our current prohibition on foreign nationals making contributions, donations, or expenditures in connection with federal elections, as I've said before, when this issue has come up, is very broad and robust, obviously broad and robust enough for the special counsel to bring 13 indictments. From what I understand from the vice chair's past rulemaking proposals, the focus of those have been more on foreign ownership of corporations, percentage of foreign ownership, board membership, whether there is foreign government involvement. And up until this point, I have not heard of much evidence in the way of foreign actors using the corporate form in order to potentially interfere. In fact, there's been, at least in the for-profit corporate world, there hasn't been much evidence that domestic corporations of any kind have been heavily involved in political activities. There have been interesting articles written and studies taken that for many corporations, it's just not a good bet that problems with customer bases, problems with shareholders have kept many corporations from getting actively involved in political activities. It's been more of individuals up until this point, wealthy individuals who financed a good portion of the activities of super PACs and 501c4s and so forth. So, like I said, I look forward to to what sort of findings the Senate Intelligence Committee comes forward with, and If they bring forward evidence that changes that understanding, then I think that I would have to reconsider what my past positions have been. But at this point, I think where the evidence has been strongest has been on the internet ads, and as a result, I supported the internet disclaimer rulemaking, and look forward to completing that soon. So at this point, I await the fruits of the efforts of the Intelligence Committee and whatever information that we get from the various government investigations that are going on. I don't want to say that the vice chair is going to make a motion today, I'm not going to be able to support it today, but I don't want to say that I'm shutting the door for all time and for all from all consideration in the future. I just think that the record that we get from these committees and from these investigations, I would like to see more evidence. And I think that if that is strong and specific enough, that could guide us in a rulemaking that would be, I think, specifically targeted and would directly address the issues where foreign interference has been primarily focused.
Commissioner Walther, did you have any comment?
I support, as my record shows, the desire for us to get more involved in whatever we have in the way of jurisdiction, rulemaking-wise, policy-wise, to try to strengthen our grip on the flow of money that might be coming from outside sources. So it's kind of almost blindly applaud any effort we can engage in to do that. And I would support Commissioner Weintraub's motion, generally as I understand it, would be expressed. But yes, I think we'll be learning a lot as we go along, but I think it would be good for us to begin to be leaders in it rather than completely, I wouldn't say apathetic, but at least I'm not inclined to wait until we have some information from some governmental agencies and then try and piece together, now where do we go? Or in fact, I think we could put together some regulations that I would like to see us consider. And I do happen to think that how we want to deal with corporate activity in the campaign finance field needs to be looked at in terms of composition and power, namely who has control of the shares of stock, who owns the shares of stock, what shares of stock are voting shares, what shares of stock are not voting shares, to what extent can lending be a force that becomes a governing entity for the company where it becomes so indebted that it certainly has to listen to the lender to a greater degree than maybe they would otherwise have to do. So I think we should look at all those factors to show where the money comes from and how it gets there. So for that reason, I'm inclined to support Commissioner Weintraub's efforts.
I'd like to associate myself with the comments of Commissioner Peterson. I feel exactly the same way, and I stand by the statements that we've put out on the past on these issues and don't think anything has changed. I have a question for the Vice Chair. You mentioned the American Chemistry Council, and it was from a newspaper article. Could you please tell me which newspaper article that is, and could you please tell me which newspaper article you're talking about?
I'm sorry, I don't have it with me today, but I'd be happy to provide it to you. My best recollection is that was in the New York Times, but I could be mistaken about that.
Okay.
But I will definitely provide that.
I think we need to be extraordinarily careful about throwing out information from a newspaper article and besmirching organizations that are, we're federal officials here at the Federal Election Commission, and there's a mechanism whereby we investigate things. We have an enforcement process, and we have other processes set up. And I just think it's completely inappropriate for somebody to besmirch an organization. I don't know anything about the organization. I don't know exactly what you're talking about. But because they have a Chinese member doesn't mean that they're spending Chinese money. There are already laws against foreign influence and foreign spending of elections, and a lot of corporations, they know exactly what the law is, and they're very mindful about it, and I think it's completely inappropriate.
May I respond, Madam Chair?
Oh, sure.
I did not besmirch them. I merely stated a fact that the American, and I will provide you with documentation of this, that the American Chemistry Council happens to have a member, which is a very large and wealthy chemical company that's controlled by the government of China.
Are they the only trade association that has a foreign member?
I don't know, but that would be a really interesting question to look into.
Do the international unions have international members?
I think that these are all questions that we should explore and look into.
Okay.
Because right. If there are groups that are spending money and it's deriving from foreign sources, then I think we should all be
concerned. There's already laws
about this.
That cover that exact issue.
Thank you for the interruption. There are laws, but the question is, how do those laws and how do our interpretations of those laws govern groups that spend money and get that money from other places? We have you have indicated in the past an interest to some degree in a sort of a negative certification process, which I think I had suggested something like that originally, and I was pleased to see that you liked at least that part of the idea. Because there are a lot of groups that spend money, and we don't know where the money comes from. Super PACs collect money from all sorts of places, and sometimes they're individuals, and sometimes they're not individuals. Sometimes they are groups, and again, we don't know, so who's behind those groups? Sometimes it is quite a tangled web to try and trace back where the money comes from. We had a case, it was, if you want to look it up, MERS 7081, Floridians for a strong middle class, which involved allegations that a Florida developer was arranging for Chinese foreign nationals to set up real estate LLCs and trusts to buy real estate property, and that one of the properties that this particular developer was involved with had given $50,000 to a super PAC. And so we were presented with that complaint that nobody really knew where that money came from and if that particular LLC was one of the ones that was basically just a shell for a foreign owner of a real estate property. And that complaint was presented to us, and really all we would have needed to do was ask a single question. We just needed to ask one question. Where did the money come from? Was the money that was supplied to that LLC and was the source of the contribution, did any of it come from a foreign national? And I am very sorry to say that there was not a single other person at this table today who was willing to ask that one question. That case was dismissed. I voted against dismissing it. I thought that it would not have been a resource-intense investigation to find out whether there was foreign money coming in through that particular LLC, and nobody cared enough to ask a question. So when we talk about the protections in the law has to be enforced, and we have to sometimes look behind the immediate donor to a political organization. And if my colleague is not aware of any information about foreigners potentially using those dark money groups as a venue for getting money into our system, then I guess this is just another instance of people living in their own bubbles, because you're plainly not reading the same things that I'm reading. I would be happy to address in a rulemaking the broad questions of corporate ownership and corporate control, but I am honestly most concerned right now about the possibility of foreign money coming in through LLCs and C4s and other dark money groups, and also for the potential spending by corporations that are owned or controlled by foreign governments. And there are such corporations active in our economy today. I think that given what we have learned about the devious techniques that some foreign actors have used to try and influence our elections, I think we would be very naive to think that, well, they would never use a dark money group to funnel money into our elections. That would be, because that's, you know, that would be wrong. I think there's a lot of information that we don't know and that we should find out, but I think there's already an adequate factual predicate for us to act today. And if we wait for every last investigation to be concluded, we're going to be talking in 2020 about how to address, how to write new regulations for the 2022 or 2024 elections based on what happened in 2016. And the world will have moved on and all sorts of new activity will have been devised by then. And I think we have to be willing to act a little bit quicker in order to try and keep up.
You mentioned the law in this area. There's already existing law that a trade association, if they have a foreign member, they cannot be a part of the decision making with respect to how that money's made, and the trade association can't use any foreign money to participate in politics. So that's already the law. And with respect to, you know, you just wanted to ask one question. Some of us read the statute, which doesn't give us roving abilities to ask people questions. We have to have a finding of a reason to believe before we can do an investigation, and that's why we voted against it.
We would have had a reason to believe finding if there were four votes for it.
Right. Commissioner Walther.
I was going to be a little defensive on that comment because I looked at that case, and it's hard sometimes when you're sitting up there when you believe something, but you don't have reason to believe it. And I don't know exactly how to describe when that occurs, but sometimes you believe that's probably what happened, but you just don't have the evidence. And I thought it was just too skinny to go forward in that case.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I recall that case as well, and I think we spent a fair amount of time on it, and we may have even talked about that offline a little bit. I believe the recommendation from the Office of General Counsel was a no reason to believe recommendation on that case, and I remember going through the reports and the complaints and everything, but there was a lot of information to dig in that case, and it comes down to, do we have an adequate factual basis to find reason to believe in that case? And I ultimately reached the same conclusion. It wasn't on the basis of thinking that this isn't a serious issue. I think that we've tried to prioritize the allegations and complaints that relate to violations of the foreign national ban, and I think that our record has been to take them very seriously and to pursue many of them. But yeah, in that particular case, like Commissioner Walther, it was just looking at what evidence was presented there and whether or not it triggered the statutory threshold, and I followed counsel's recommendation on that.
Madam Vice Chair.
Well, that goes to a long-standing debate over how much evidence we expect complainants to present to us or whether we should use our investigatory authority under the law to find out, because the simple truth is that nobody knew then and nobody knows now who was behind that money.
The statute, I'm sorry, were you finished?
Yeah.
The statute specifically says we can't do an investigation before a vote on reason to believe. It's right there in the statute.
Well, of course. That's why I supported a reason to believe finding so that we could do the investigation.
Okay. Anything else? Commissioner Walther?
Just to go add to that, this is part of the frustration that I certainly share, and that is sometimes when you get to a case that comes before us and you know, all we have to do is just do one thing, and we can find out one way or the other whether it's true or not. But until you have enough to go forward, we're simply not able to, get out and write letters or conduct interviews or that type of thing. That's just simply what the law is. It's frustrating, though, however, because sometimes it seems like it wouldn't take much to find out basic facts, but it is just we're hamstrung by the law, and it's designed to, for a good reason, but for frustrating results sometimes.
There's no other comments. We'll move on to the next matter.
I would like to make
a
motion, perhaps several motions. with absolutely no expectation that they will succeed. But I think there have been a lot of good ideas that have been posited before this day, and I think that, as I said, my colleagues put forward a proposal for a policy statement. Back as far as 2011, the commission put forth a detailed regulatory proposal, several commissioners put forward a detailed regulatory proposal about how in the post-Citizens United world we should deal with the foreign national prohibition. And as a result of the hearing that I held here at the FEC, I propose that we look into issues like percentage of foreign ownership, board membership of corporations, foreign government ownership, the type of corporation, implementation measures. And I think we ought to incorporate all of those proposals, direct counsel to take everything that's been produced so far here at the FEC and package it up into a notice of proposed rulemaking and present it to the commission for a vote on a very short timeline that would allow us to consider getting out a rule within 90 days.
Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Walther.
I like it generally, but I'd like, more specific, what's the motion? In terms of, you want to?
The motion would be to start a rulemaking, to direct the Office of General Counsel to collect all the proposals that have already been suggested here at the agency, including some that you yourself proposed, Commissioner Walther, and were based on the 2011 NPRM that we voted for back in the day. The policy statement that the Republican commissioners put forward, the ideas that were suggested at the forum and summarized in my memo to the commission of September 28th, 2016, and incorporate all of that into a draft notice of proposed rulemaking for commission consideration on a schedule that would allow us to get a rule out within 90 days.
Once again, I support what you say, and I'm wondering in terms of directing the Office of General Counsel to do it would mean gathering all the documents and making a composition of them or get their recommendations, or how would you, I mean, that would be a massive document if we tried to just add on to all of them.
It would be a long document.
A short period of time.
It would be a long document, but they could start with the NPRM that we proposed in 2011, which is already written. The proposal that the proposed policy statement that the Republican commissioners put forth also is already written. There's a lot of work that's already been done. So I'm not saying it would be a quick and dirty job that they could do overnight, but I do think that they could do it.
May I ask the Office of General Counsel, do you have any thoughts on how a motion like that could be framed? That would be give you the guidance you need to go forward.
I think the motion is sufficiently clear that we could understand how to implement it. It would be a challenging undertaking, but we could do our best.
If you can do it.
So how would you, and if you're not prepared to answer this, maybe the vice chair is, how would you incorporate this part of the vice chair's proposal that we should take into account, and this is on page 4 of the September 9th, 2006 memo. It's the third bullet. That we should take into account the possibly divided loyalties of both U.S.-based companies with global assets and foreign companies with U.S. subsidiaries. I can't even imagine how we would do that under our statute and how anybody would support the government trying to decide where loyalties are.
I'm sorry, which memo was that?
This is your September 9th, 2016 memo.
I actually didn't refer to that in my motion. I referred to...
Oh, so you don't want to do that anymore?
Well, after September 9th, you may recall that you thought that the proposals in my September 9th memo were too vague.
Okay.
And so I came back with more detailed proposals on September 28th. There are a list of specific questions on pages 3 to 5 of that memorandum, and I think all of those questions could just be lifted wholesale and plopped into an NPRM for public comment.
Okay. I'm glad you took that part out.
Well, that was based on some of the testimony that we received at the forum. But I tried to listen to what your concerns were and to narrow the focus and make it more specific so that it might attract more support.
Any other comments on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion fails by a vote of 2-2. Commissioner Walther and the Vice Chair voting in favor, Commissioner Peterson and I voting against.
Madam Chair?
Yes?
I would like to try a narrower proposal. I would like to move that the Commission open a rulemaking and direct the Office of General Counsel to draft a notice of proposed rulemaking, including any appropriate proposed rule text that would address specifically the topic of preventing spending by foreign government-owned or controlled corporations, as outlined in Topic 3 of my September 28th memorandum. The topic of preventing the use of corporate conduits by foreign nationals to spend funds on American elections, as well as the proposal that the Republican commissioners put forth involving negative certifications from, I think it was not a requirement, but proposed a safe harbor for super PACs and other groups that would require them to provide, that would not require, but would provide a safe harbor if they provided negative certifications stating that they knew that they were not using any money that was derived from foreign sources. So I'd like to narrow my proposal to those three topics, and again, with the direction to the Office of General Counsel to prepare a notice of proposed rulemaking on an expedited schedule that would allow us to adopt a rule within 90 days.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you repeat what the second item, the first was spending by foreign government-controlled companies,
yep.
And the second was... when I was writing down, I had conduits and foreign nationals, but I wasn't...
It goes actually to the same, it's a different, perhaps a broader formulation of the same topic that you raised in your policy proposal, the use of conduits by foreign nationals. Foreign nationals using other organizations, be they corporate or otherwise, to spend funds on American elections.
As I said in my earlier statement, I'm not prepared to vote for a rulemaking proposal today, but I do look forward to seeing what the results of are, especially the Senate Intelligence Committee's investigation and any other relevant government investigations that are currently taking place to see whether or not these are identified as ways in which our election system is being undermined. So I'm not ready at this point, but I just wanted to make sure that I understood the scope of the motion.
I agree with Commissioner Peterson. Any other comments on the motion? Commissioner Walther?
I think one of the things we should look at as we go forward, because we're not going to get there today, is that we do have experience in the television field where, you know, foreign interests are balanced with reasonable amounts of investment, but not enough to control. We might look at that, look at the history of it, what the lessons learned, lessons, you know, which they'd like to maybe want to go over, but at least I think it would be a good educational source for us to take a look at that, because we do have governmental public experience in trying to parse out foreign interests and non-foreign interests, public American interests.
And we received a lot of good information on that topic and on examples from tax law and other areas of the law from the experts at the forum that I convened. So we already have a lot of information in hand on that exact topic.
Any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No, the motion fails by a vote of 2-2. Commissioner Walther and the Vice Chair voting in favor, and Commissioner Peterson and I voting against. Okay, moving on. The next matter on the agenda is adoption of a 40-year report.
This isn't a laughing matter. I put this on the agenda, and it's a composite of a couple of things that I'm no longer going to support, so I'm going to pull that and come back with a revised version. But I would like to say this. I do think that the idea of having what we have thought was valuable for the public, and not the people that live and die election law, but those who want to know something about the Federal Election Commission, just the general public, we provided a service like that by having a history of the origins of the Federal Election Commission for over 40 years. We reported that for 30 years. I think we should do it again. I think, especially now with the fast movement of what's going on here, what's gone on here, if the public went now to our source, which is our 30-year history, and that was all they had, they wouldn't have a fair or a comprehensive source to rely on that would be accurate. So we made efforts to try and come up with something that could work. We started with the Information Division, who was predominantly the author of the 30-year report. And it was unanimously adopted by the commission at that time. I look at it and I see, sure, I could have written it differently, or maybe we could have added this, or maybe we could have taken this out. But the fact is, we don't need to do that to give a good general overview to the public of what we've done and where we've been. We don't have to live and die all the ups and downs. But a general source for the public to then go further, I think, is something we should continue to do. So I'm going to go back and revamp this a little bit and then come back at the next meeting, if I can, for consideration.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing that we may want to look at enhancing that may address some of the concerns that Commissioner Walther pointed out is when back in 2015, the Information Division took the initiative and created a 40th anniversary timeline, which is available on our website. I'd read out the whole website for you, but maybe we can make it as part of the record. I'll read it through, and then anybody who wants to look at it, it's https://www.fec.gov/updates/new-interactive-timeline-chronicles-40-years-of-commission-history. There you go. For anybody who's interested, you can probably just look up 40th anniversary timeline in the search engine on our new newly enhanced website. But the thing that I like about this is, I mean, for newer generations who want to find out information about any source, but about the FEC in particular, is you want to go to the website and have interactive materials. And this has some I think, a lot of really good features, including links to all of the past 10, 20, 30-year reports, some great pictures, including of past commissions, video of commissioners testifying. And I think that perhaps what maybe this was updated, this was created for the 40th anniversary. We haven't updated it since, but perhaps we could work with the Information Division to have this enhanced so that on a somewhat periodic basis, whether every quarter, every half year, every year, we update whatever major legislative changes have happened, rulemakings, major advisory opinions, any court cases, any relevant appearances by commissioners if they're testifying in front of Congress or so forth, and enhancing what the good work that the Information Division has already put forth and extending it forward may in many ways be an even more valuable resource for those who want to know the full ins and outs of the commission's history. And as part of this timeline, they still have access to all of the prior iterations of the relevant 10, 20-year iterations of reports. So I would put that on the table for consideration that perhaps we can work with our Information Division to bolster that timeline and have a system in place for regular updates. And I think that would be a terrific resource, again, for since most of us now, that's the way we like to get our information is through interactive displays on the internet. And like I said, I'd invite anybody who's listening to this to take a look at that. And I think finding ways to enhance that would be a useful undertaking for the commission.
Thank you. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Commissioner Walter's efforts. He's on this issue. We have terrific staff. I'm a big fan of our info division, as I hope they know. And they did what they always do. They wrote up a 40-year report that included virtually cut and paste descriptions of some of the older parts of our history from earlier decade reports that the commission had issued and adopted, and put that before us. And if anybody wants to see what the staff draft looks like, I put it on the agenda at the last meeting of Commissioner Walther's chairmanship last year on 12/14/2017. It was agenda document 17-63A. I think that doing the preparing a history of the commission is something that we can well delegate to our staff. And the reason why this document has not been issued is because commissioners' offices decided to get involved, whip out their red pen, and try and rewrite this sentence and that sentence to reflect their personal ideologies. And I think that's, personally, I would rather spend my time doing other things. I am content with the excellent work that the staff did. And as I said, if anybody wants to look for it, they can find it.
Any other comments? Okay. Just wanted to point out that tomorrow is the deadline for the comment period for the internet disclaimer rulemaking, and we have a hearing coming up at the end of July. So the end of June. And that's what I know a lot of us will be focused on in the next few weeks. I'm looking forward to reading the comments. And we're also going to try to tackle the nationwide IE rulemaking soon. We have comments in on that one. So I think we have we still don't have a volunteer mail policy for the public and our audit staff. So I think we have a lot of important things that are more relevant to the lives of the people who have to follow what we do here.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to end on a positive note. I share your interest in the comments of on the internet disclaimer rulemaking. I'm hoping we're just going to get bucket loads, and I'm looking forward to reading them, as many of them as I personally can, but I'll have somebody reading all of them. And I want to remind people also that if they want to testify at the hearing on June 27th, they should include that in their comment.
Thank you. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters?
Madam Chair, may I have a moment? Sorry, I didn't warn you I was going to do this. Could I have a moment?
Sure.
I would like to, I didn't warn them either, but I'd like to introduce two of our summer interns in the internship program in the Office of General Counsel. Apologize, I did not warn them. So with us today is Jedediah Blake and Abby Taylor. They both just completed their first years at GW Law School. Jedediah is assisting us in the policy division, and Abby is assisting us in the administrative law division. And I just wanted to welcome them to the commission and put them on the spot.
Back there. Hi, how you doing? Welcome. Thank you, Ms. Stevenson. Are there any management or administrative matters the commission needs to discuss today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.